Bible sind dann doch ein Stop at communicating in writing.
Before I start with the introduction, I just want to start by apologizing for failing to appear before the committee on the 16th as requested. Apparently, we were about to appear on the 9th, and then we made arrangements for the 16th to go away. Okay, I must just start by pointing out that unfortunately the document that comes from the committee itself, we've just received copies this morning, about 5 minutes ago. So unfortunately we have not gone through the document so that we are able to answer the specific questions. So we may not have all the information that the committee requires. Because had we received them maybe a few days earlier, we would have been able to prepare some responses to the specific questions and comments that we see appearing in the document.
It was very kind of us to do that anyway, because we should have just said to the members, keep those documents and fire questions. So we're trying to save that kind of a situation.
Yes.
I think it was very kind of us to do that anyway. So what I've been saying, do your best, okay? And I think some of your members will be also going through the document as you are presenting, as you have prepared yourself to come and present. So we'll be engaging with you as we move on.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Yes, you are right, Chair, because previously we didn't, there was no document, and the members just fired questions and that. So, thank you. Okay, what we are going to do is I'm going to present an overview. On the screen, those are the issues. The issues that we are going to cover. I'm going to give you a brief overview of our annual report, and then from there, Mr. Hoffman is going to talk to the financials, and then from there, we are going to specifically speak about some of our financial goals that we have given to National Treasury. And then from there, we're going to talk about the acquisition goals. And then from there, we're going to talk about the soft issues of the amenities. And then that will be the end of our presentation. And from there, we'll take questions. Now, let me keep starting with the overview. I just want to share with the committee that our financial report, as you have noticed even last year, those were here, that we have obtained a clean report without any qualification. That happened last year and the year previously. So we try and do our best to pay attention to the issues that we need to pay attention to. And then I also want to talk a little bit to and talk about the transformation of FarmSco. About 2 years or so ago, the minister asked that AMSCO be transformed. And then that meant that AMSCO should split into two. The one leg would be the acquisition function of AMSCO as we currently do it. And the other leg would be a dairy. And then that dairy would consist of the research. And the research and evaluation capabilities of AMSCO, which were to be consolidated with some similar capabilities in the CSIR and the test and evaluation test range, which is in DINEL. And what has happened is that after the minister has instructed that that should happen, there were a number of committees that were set up to address that task. And they've done a lot of work, and up to early this year, when now the work that has been done was to split AMSCO into two and take the dairy and form it into a new organization, and then start running that organization from 2008 April as a separate organization. Now, what has happened is that there has been a number of delays as far as that is concerned, because there's a number of challenges that were picked up. There's a number of challenges that were picked up by the team, and the latest information is that the minister has now asked that we, AMSCO and the DOD and the CSIR and DPE, should form a team to do a depth study to see these type of organizations, how other countries treat them, where they locate them, how they address the security issues and the funding issues. We are busy with that exercise, and we are hoping to produce a report somewhere in the middle of November, with a view of taking it to the minister to take a decision and see if at all certain things can be implemented still this year. And previously, we have mentioned that the Simonstown Naval Dockyard, which was a facility of the Navy, which they use it for maintaining their ships, was going to be now a facility of AMSCO. And that transfer was supposed to happen sometime in April the 1st, but it was delayed because of certain unhappiness which were raised by the unions, and subsequently those were eventually overcome, and now the Naval Dockyard Simonstown is a facility of AMSCO. It has been transferred to AMSCO. And now AMSCO, after taking over this facility, have done an audit and looked at the dockyard and found that it was hugely inadequate in terms of servicing the new corvettes and the submarines that we have bought from Germany. And we are currently now, we have just started talks with a number of European companies who are running dockyards in those countries, including the UK, to see if we can form joint ventures with a view of buying new equipment and upgrading the dockyard, because the equipment that is there, some of it were bought in the 1940s, and they are unable to meet the tolerances of the work that needs to be done on the new ships. So we are talking with these people with a view of forming joint ventures so that we upgrade equipment. And then we are also looking at developing a training center at the dockyard where we will train technical skills apprentices and engineers in the area. And we're also looking at expanding the capability of the dockyard for it to be able to do other related work. And also we are looking at issues of improving efficiencies. And then the last thing that I want to talk about is to give you a very brief overview. But Mr. Mpana, who is looking at acquisition, will give you the details. We talk about the special defense packages. The special defense packages, which were started around 98, 99, now are drawing to a close. The last frigate or corvette. I saw a comment in the report prepared by the committee. We use the frigate and the corvette interchangeably. The last frigate or corvette was delivered to the SA Navy in March this year. And the last submarine will be delivered in April next year. And then of the aircraft, there are 16 Hawks aircraft were delivered to the SA South African Air Force. And then the remainder, initially it was 7, is now 8. 6 of them have already been delivered, and I believe 2, the Air Force has taken a decision that they will be delivered later because they want to upgrade them to the third generation technology so that the last ones are better than the current ones, with a view later maybe to upgrade the current the ones that were delivered earlier to the third generation of technology. Chair, as an overview, I want to stop here and now ask Mr. Pierre Hoffman to carry on with the presentation and give you and tell the committee about the financials of AMSCO.
I was just asking the secretary whether he has received an apology from the chairperson, and he said no. Thank you. the chairperson.
The chairperson of AMSCO. Oh, no, that must be an oversight. But previously, the chairperson had joined us intermittently. He has not attended to the committees all the time, but if at all the committee wants him to be here all the time, we will just make sure that that happens next time.
The constitution dictates.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. We have noted this issue.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know this is not time for questions. Would the Honorable Mr. Timo just repeat what he said in respect of the remaining 7 o'clock, which is 8, and he spoke something about upgrade, delaying some of them for upgrade. I didn't quite get that. Can you just repeat that? Thank you.
Just to recap, Mr. Timo.
What I said is that we have ordered the aircraft with a specific with certain specifications that we want these technologies and this and this. And then now what is going to happen is there have been the latest versions of the technology that we are going to have in our aircraft. Now the Air Force has decided that they will let 2 aircraft stay behind so that they can be upgraded and be fitted with the latest version of those technologies. And then, so that the performance should be better than the other ones, and then they evaluate them, and most likely in the future they will look at whether they want to upgrade others to the same technology. That's what I said.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will start off by giving a summary of the group's financial results, as it also appears in the annual report. The first part here on the slide. The first one on the slide, the first column here, is AMSCO without the subsidiary companies. Then we have the breakdown of the AMSCO business subsidiary part, and then a total of for the group as a whole. I will first deal with the AMSCO part and show and discuss some of the variances. And then when I come to the third goal, as in the program, I will then get to the performance of AMSCO business as an entity and show also result of variances and the explanations for the variances. First of all, if you look at AMSCO as an entity without the subsidiary companies, the income part, there we have the total grant or transfer payment from the Department of Defense that was fully paid during the year. This is without that, just to reconcile with the DoD's figures. Then we don't show any turnover on the AMSCO side because we're not doing contractual business like the AMSCO business. And on other income, there is a variance of 8.1. I will, on the next slide, deal with all these variances, the income one, and also then the variances on the cost side. So in terms of the AMSCO, then we've had a surplus of 19 million. Compared to a budget of 14.9 million loss, that's a 34 million variance on that part. If I can then move to the explanations for variances, the first one, the income part, well, there was an 8.1 million on the income side. First of all, 4 million of that was due to a stop-start situation on the rental that has to be paid by the DoD and Public Works to AMSCO in terms of the rental of our building. So what happened here, due to the uncertainty, this comes now over a period of 2 years. There was an instruction that the DoD should stop the payment of rental to AMSCO, and also that in terms of our contract with Public Works that they don't pay us the escalation of the rental in terms of the standing contract. Now, when we budgeted, we didn't budget for that due because we due to the uncertainty. But when we finalized our annual statement, we were then forced or we were obliged to put in the total income. That's for that reason there's a deviation between the budgeted figure and the actual income figure. But on the other hand, we also have then to provide for bad debts because there was no payment from the DOD and for the escalation from Public Works to that amount. So we had to make provision for bad debts to that extent. Since our annual report was finalized, we've had discussions with Mr. Tomo, the chairman, with the minister, and also with the DedSec, and they've actually issued us with a letter that they will start paying again, and they will also give us the recovery of the outstanding amount. So I think for the moment, this issue will be has been solved. We're just waiting for final payment from the side of the DOD. In terms of the cost, there's a 25.9 million variance on the cost side. There was our provision for a post-retirement medical benefit fund. Where there was the fund is funded. It's actually overfunded, so we had to write back at 14.7 million. That's a positive aspect. I think we've had good returns on the funding side of that fund, and we were able to write back 14.7 million due to the over. Funding of that fund. Vacancies not filled or filled later than budgeted for, that is 9.5 million, mainly in the technical environment of Mr. Mokonazi, where they had a bit of a delay in appointing engineers in certain positions. I think that has now been solved. And then underspending on a lot of other issues, mainly the main areas of the underspending of that 11.3 is on computer services. We had some savings, and also on we saved on electricity quite a lot due to the requirements of the government on that side, and also on depreciation, there was a change in the accounting practices where we had to do a re-evaluation of the lifespan of our assets, and that had a major influence on the amount of depreciation. So that are the main areas where we had the savings. And then, of course, the 9.6 million bad debts that we had to make provision for. And then finally, on if we can go back one step, on the purchases of assets, due to the underspending of the total budget, we've had to make the necessary arrangements, and we had to buy new servers in that particular year, and we've from the saving that we've made there, we were able to buy additional service that were urgently needed. So that covers the ANSCO part. I will then, if there aren't any questions, I can move over to the ANSCO business part as part of our next goal.
Let's agree that we'll pull questions when you've completed the
Thank you, Chief. So if you look then at ANSCO business, we've got a specific goal for ANSCO business as the management of defense technology research, test, and evaluation requirements of the Department of Defense. So we can see, I will also move to the next slide and show the variances with the explanations, but there was a huge improvement in the turnover. I will come to that on the next slide. The transfer payment was exactly as budgeted. Cost of sales was also a huge increase, that it directly related to the increase in the turnover, and then also on their indirect decision-making costs, there's also a huge saving that I will also explain in the next slide. First, the increase in sales, mainly due to the additional 4 Hawk aircraft that were imported and cleared to the value of 282 million. We must understand that when we talk about turnover in the onshore business side, in terms of the accounting practices, we have to bring in the total value of the equipment as part of the turnover. But our markup, it's a very small amount of the total turnover. So the turnover and the cost of sales in the case of these transactions, the amount that comes to onshore pocket is a very, very small amount. So that's why there's such a huge increase, because 280 million had to be, was not budgeted for, but due to the import of the Hawks, that was part of our additional turnover. And then there was also a significant amount in terms of exchange profits on the foreign stock sales. And then on the negative side, there was about 15.7 million work that did not materialize. So this was the main element of the reason for the deviation on the turnover. If you look then into the increase of the cost of sales, mainly also due to the Hawks, and the also then the value of businesses that did not materialize. Then on the cost side, the rest of the cost, there was a lot of vacancies in onshore business, a lot of retirements, boardings, and also a lot of vacancies that they could not fill due to the unavailability of certain specific requirements of personnel and specific standards. So there was a huge underspending in terms of vacancies not solved. The same problem here, the whole recalculation of the useful life of assets also ended up in an amount, not the depreciation lower than the budgeted amount for. And then a reduction in the various smaller items. So that brings us to the total 25.1 million on the operating cost side. Okay, that's our first goal in terms of the financial performance. That is the onshore business part. And then the second goal is the management of defense industrial participation. And there we have a good performance over the past year.
From members, are you comfortable with the approach that David Hoffman completes the presentation, or do we want to go section by section?
Sure. Can we continue, Chief? Thank you.
So on the dip side, our total goal of was 1.8 billion for the year under review of credits granted to overseas suppliers. We've achieved 2.2 billion credits granted, percentage performance of 122%. In terms of our operating budget that's related to this activity, we were basically near our target in terms of spending against budget.
Then the
a little bit of detail. I think the main contribution of this excellent performance was the achievement of an export contract on BAE land systems to the value of 563 million rand. And also the Augusta light utility helicopters, their obligation is now fully discharged. And in total, just as a total summary, on the SCP to date, 11.4 billion rand, 76% of the total obligation was the benefit to the SA defense industry so far. And then The reason for the underspending that I've just mentioned, the small amount of underspending on the operating side, was mainly on subsistence and travel, where we started to save some costs on travel. Okay, that completes my part of the presentation. I will now hand over to Mr. Mokwanandi. Should he come to you or should I wait?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the acquisition that we are doing for DOD, I would first like to take you through to with the bar graph in terms of the amount of money that has been spent per quarter. Having realized that the baseline for the first quarter was 12.245 billion rand, and if you look at the middle bar, that's the amount that was planned to be spent for the first quarter. And then the third bar is the amount that was actually spent for that particular first quarter. Now, if you look at the amount, we have planned that for the quarter we'll be spending 1.876 billion rand. And then we spent actually 1.755 billion rand. For the second quarter, the plan was that we'll be spending 1.85 billion rand, but the actual was 2.358 billion rand. And then the third quarter, we had planned that we would be spending 2.249 billion rand, and the actual was 2.195 billion rand. And the last quarter, the plan was that we'll be spending 3.406 billion rand, and then we spent actually 2.528 billion rand. Then the last column indicates the accumulative amount that was spent for the financial year. The budget, you would see that it wasn't constant. If you look at the revised baseline, it's 12.245 for the first quarter. The second quarter was 12.472. And the third quarter was 12.528, and the last quarter was 12.511. The slight increase is due to the operational fund that we sometimes get from the DOD. We are sharing the operational fund, which is for procurement and maintenance. That's why there's a slight change towards the end of the year. So we'll see that towards the end of the year, we received more money than at the beginning of the first quarter. Just to indicate the trend in terms of the last financial year, you see that the first quarter, as I indicated and explained previously, this was what was planned to be spent in terms of the cash flow, which was 1.876, and we ended up spending 1.755. And accumulatively, you see that it rises up right up to the last quarter. As I indicated earlier on, that we're on the last quarter, we had the baseline of 12.511 billion rand, and the plan was that to spend 9.381 billion rand. We ended up spending 8.836. I will explain the deviation and the reason later. In terms of the goal number three, which is acquisition of categories, one defense material, which is excluding the defense strategic packages. The baseline amount at the end of the financial year was 4.47, which is the goal that we're supposed to achieve. And then in terms of the requirement received from the DOD for the end of the financial year end, the goal was to have received 4.45 billion rand, which is 99.5% of the baseline. And we achieved 3.3 billion rand, which is 74.2% of the goal. Having received those requirements, we had to place the contract, and the contract that were to be placed by AMCO, the goal was that we needed to place contracts to the value of 4.38 billion rand, which would be 98% of the baseline. And we achieved 3.28 billion rand, which is 74.8%. As you see, that we received in terms of the requirement 74.2. Now, as a result of the contract that you placed, we also have 74.8. I will explain the reason later. The cash flow, in terms of the cash flow that has to be paid on the contract that has been placed, the goal was to have a cash flow of 4.11 billion rand, which is 92% of the baseline. We achieved 2.19 billion rand, and that is now 53% of the goal. In terms of the amount of money that was allocated for this goal number three, the budget at the beginning of the financial year was 215.8 million rand, and the expenditure was 203.4 million rand, which is 94.3% of the budget. Just to explain in terms of this goal number three, the reason why there was a deviation from the goal. In terms of the requirements received, we didn't receive the required amount of the requirement as planned from DOD, and then that was due to that DOD doing prioritization in their funds, and they ended up with us not having received enough funds. As I indicated earlier on, the contract that was placed were limited due to that the extent of the requirements that we received. We only received 74.2% of the requirements. In terms of the cash flow, we had an understanding on cash flow due to insufficient requirements received, as I explained earlier on, which is 74.2%. And also there was understanding due to the underperformance of the defense-related industries. For an example, the late delivery of the GBS, which is behind about 45 months, which was due to the problems that Daniel encountered in terms of integrating the subsystems. They experienced problems with the functionality of the subsystems, especially mainly the communication system, as well as other subsystems. That ended up in a situation now where Daniel couldn't perform according to plan. The other delay is due to the artillery target engagement system. Also, there was a problem with the functionality of the system from the ADS, and due to also the long lead times, then we ended up with a delay for that system. There was also a delay for the Roy Falk due to the latent defect that was found on the flange coupling of the gearbox. That problem has been resolved, and then we hope now Daniel also will be in a position to start now working according to the required schedule. In terms of explaining the deviation of the funding for that goal number three, there was a deviation of 5.7%. In terms of rent value, it's 12.4 million rand. And that underspending is mainly due to the vacancies explained earlier on, that we had challenges in terms of being able to appoint the appropriate engineers with the competency and the skills required. And also because of now poor performance of the suppliers or the contractors, we ended up with an underspending in terms of subsistence and travel. Looking at goal number four, which is a strategic defense package program, as I explained also previously, that for the financial year end, the baseline goal was 6.38 billion rand. The requirements that we received from the DOD at the end of the financial year was 6.35 billion rand, which is 99.5% of the baseline. What we achieved was 6 billion rand, which is 94.4% of the goal. In terms of the contract that we placed out of the requirements that we received, at the end of the financial year, the goal was supposed to be 6.25 billion rand, which would have been at 98% of the baseline. We achieved 5.85 billion rand, which is 95.6% of the goal. In terms of the cash flow or the amount of money that was paid, at the end of the financial year, the goal was to have paid 5.86, and that would have been 92% of the baseline. We ended up achieving 5.27 billion rand, which is 89.9% of the goal. In terms of the expenditure or the budget that was allocated to this goal, the budget was 13.8 million. We spent 13 million, and that is now an achievement of 94.2%.
And then just going to the details in terms of explaining the reason for the deviation.
In terms of the requirements received from the DOT, also due to the fact that we didn't receive the planned amount from the DOT in terms of the requirements, as there was also privatization on exercise in DOT. That also led to the fact that we also received the amount also later towards the end of the year, like I showed that some of the amount of money received towards the end of the financial year. In terms of the contract, having received those requirements, contracts were placed, which were placed or were limited due to the extent of the requirements, as explained earlier on, that having received 94.4% of the requirements, we could only place contract on those, on that amount of money that we received. In terms of the cash flow, the understanding of the cash flow was due to the savings on the rate of exchange for our strategic defense packages. We planned the rate of exchange, and as the rate of exchange fluctuated, it's in our favor. Then we experience savings, like in this case now, we experience savings on the return, which is the fighter aircraft, as well as on the corvette or the frigate. So that was in our favor in terms of the fluctuation of the rate of exchange. And also, there was underperformance from the industry, especially if you look at the light utility helicopter. Only 9 of the planned 11 helicopters were delivered. Also, if you look at the aircraft, experienced problems in terms of the logistics milestone. We're supposed to have achieved that milestone at a certain date. And because of the delay, that also resulted now in a cash flow not being paid as planned. And also, in terms of that problem, there was a problem, as explained earlier on the Hawk, that the aircraft were delivered at a certain level of the software, which we call operational capability 2. So they still need to upgrade that to operational capability 3, the software of their communication system, as well as the electronic warfare. And that also, in terms of the plan, was delayed, now resulting into now the cash flow being underspent. In terms of that goal number 4, spending, there was a deviation of 5.8% in rent terms, which is 0.8 million rent. And the underspending was mainly due to the less traveling as a result also of poor performance by the industry in terms of the planned expense of subsistence and shuttling was not undertaken as planned. Now looking at goal number 5, which is procurement and product system support, which is also mainly maintenance of the product and the systems that we have commissioned to with the DOT. The baseline at the end of the financial year was to be 1.66 billion rand, And then requirements received from DOD, we had planned that at the end of the financial year we would receive 99.5%. In rand terms, it's supposed to be 1.65 billion rand. We achieved 1.54 billion rand, which is 93.3% of the goal. In terms of the contract that we placed, at the end of the financial year, the goal was to place a contract for the value of 1.62 billion rand, which would have been 98% of the baseline. We achieved 1.53 billion rand, which is 94.4% of the goal. In terms of the cash flow or the amount of money that we paid, the goal was to have paid 1.53 million rand, which would have been 92% of the baseline. We ended up achieving 1.37 billion rand, which is 89.5% of the goal. The amount of the expense or budget planned for this goal number 5, it was 98.4 million rand. And we spent 92.8 million rand, which is 94.3% of the budget. To explain the details in terms of the deviation as explained earlier on, in terms of the requirements received, not all the requirements were received from the DOD, but not to the extent of the earlier ones. You see that in this case we received 93.3%. Also hence the deviation about this much. In terms of the cash flow, there was also understanding on the cash flow due to the late receipt on also the fact that in some instances we experienced problems with the unavailability of some of the products that need to be maintained due to the requirement from the DOT in terms of the operational deployment of those products or systems. So we sent in this case the submarine, the tunnel, as well as the firefighting vehicle. We experienced challenges in terms of getting them handed over for maintenance due to high demand from the side of the DOT in terms of deploying those vehicles. Also, there was underperformance by the industry as well in this category. What we experienced was that the B vehicles, which are supposed to be maintained and repaired by the BAE system, they experienced problems. They couldn't meet the deadline, and as we engaged them, we were told that they have problems with the personnel. We have engaged the BAE system, and they've indicated to us in terms of what actions they've taken to correct the situation. They have employed more engineers and technicians to ensure that they alleviate that problem. We also experienced a problem with the small industry, especially the clothing, in terms of their performance to be in a position to adhere to our deadline. So they were slipping. So as a result, the cash flow was affected. In terms of the amount of money or funding that is allocated to this goal number 5, there was a deviation of 5.7, which is in rent value terms 5.6 million rand. The underspending was mainly due to vacancies, as I explained earlier on, that we have problems in terms of appointing people that have the appropriate experience and skills. And also, there was underspending due to subsistence and traveling costs, due to the fact that we did less than expected in terms of the maintenance and repair of the vehicles.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll deal with the BEE issues and the human resources issues. So the first slide gives itself an indication of the criteria that are applied to qualify as a BEE supplier. The first one is equity ownership by black people, which carries a weight of 30%. Equity ownership by black disabled persons 10%, equity ownership by black women 10%, and then representation of black persons in executive management or executive board positions 20%, skills development expenditure as a portion of total payroll, it carries a weight of 10%, and then procurement from black-owned and empowered enterprises as a portion of total procurement carries a weight of 20%, and the status of suppliers, we have got in our database 1,737 suppliers, of whom 125 are BEE suppliers. Then the performance in terms of BEE is that there's the AMP operating budget, and then there's the special defense account and the general defense account, and then AMCO business. The goal was that we should achieve 45% on the operating budget, and we achieved 56% on that one, and the funds available in rent terms are indicated, and the goal in terms of rent and the amount achieved is indicated there. And then with regard to the special defense account and the general defense account, we had a target of 25%, and we did not achieve that. We only achieved 20.95%. And then from the AMCO business side, we had a target of 30%, and we achieved 45.6%. And overall, that is the status of the expenditure. And then, just to explain a few points on the operating budget, the total purchases were 44 million, and of this, 29.3 million was spent on BEE companies. With regard to the special defense account, the non-achievement was largely due to the fact that a lot of large contracts were placed with CNL, and as you know, the expenditure on government departments doesn't, and parastatals doesn't include BEE spend. And then with regard to AMCO business, the special funds cost of sales, in other words, the amount available to spend on, among others, was on BEE, it was 121.9 million, and AMCO business spent 45.6%, which is 55.6 million, as indicated here. Then on the human resources side, we had targets on appointments for black people, and then women in the technical functional groups, and women in the non-technical functional groups, and then the representation of women on the supervisor levels and above. And the target on the appointment of black people was 80%, and we achieved 95%. And then the external appointees in the technical functional group, we had a target to appoint 20% women, and we only achieved 12%. And then for appointing non-technical women, appointing women in the non-technical functional groups, we had a target of 62%, and we achieved 81%. And then this column here, up to here, is about appointees, but with respect to representation of women in the supervisory level and above, it's not about appointees, but it's actual people employed. We had a target to have reached 29%, and we only went as far as 28%. And just to sum them up, the achievement of 95% lifted, in terms of appointing black people, lifted the representation of black people in the armed workforce. lifted. If lifted, the representation is called 1%. And then the, with regard to the external appointee in the technical functional group, the main problem in this regard is finding suitably qualified people in the marketplace. And as at the end of the financial year, women in this category only constituted 8.9%. And then women in the non-technical functional group now constitute 50% of employees in the AMCO workforce in that category. And then with regard to the representation of women in the supervisor levels in the past, one of the causes of our problems where hopefully we could have been able to find people was that some positions had to be frozen.
We thank you, and I think it's the time that the members would engage with yourself. Members, I think we have to those members who were not in when we started. The House will be sitting at 12 o'clock. So I think we have to be out of this place by 11:45 so that we can proceed to the House. The way that we are going to then let's agree, I want to hear from members, what will be the best way to engage with the presentation. Do we agree that we take the first round? Are we going to take the first round per presenter? Or do we want to pose questions across the board to all presenters? What would be the best option for members that feel comfortable to be?
Thank you, Chair. I think we take a round of questions, and the relevant person who dealt with that part of the presentation will respond.
Agreed. We may start. First, Mr. Kornhoff, then I'll come to you, Mr. Shah. Then I also see that it's here. Mr. Kornhoff.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to the CEO of AMSCO and his team for a good report and a good presentation this morning. My first question is just as introduction. The transfer to AMSCO from the DoD was 347.6 million rand transfer. It's different from the allocated. I find it a bit surprising that neither in the chairman's report, nor in the CEO's report, nor in the operations report, do I see at least a paragraph to say whether there was value for money on this amount. Just overview. In the rest of the report, you can go to the detail, financial statements, and so, but I would have liked to see whether you provided value for money for the DoD for 347.6 million, because not an insignificant amount. But I don't see this amount mentioned anywhere in the report, unless in the financial statement I see it. But nowhere up to whatever page before the financial statement do I see the top management expressing themselves whether there was value for money for this amount. That's my first comment. And number two, and maybe it falls, you must rule me out of order if it is so, but the infantry combat vehicle, on page 34, you mentioned only one offer was received from Danel. And then the final contract between AMSCO and Danel was signed on 21 May 2007. So strictly speaking, it falls out of this financial year that we're discussing today. But I would, if it's outside, we leave it, then the question falls away. But I would very much like, not even if it's not today, but as a later stage, where did this deal come to, and why was it that Parliament was never informed about it? Not in the Defence Committee, not in SCOPA, nowhere could I trace it. I can't trace it where Parliament was informed about this deal. But if it's outside the financial year, I beg to for you to say it's out of order, we stand it over. On page 65, report of your Audit and Risk Management Committee. With all respect, I think it's a very weak report, this audit report, by the chairperson, signed on the 27th of June. Because I don't see the membership of this committee, I don't see the attendance of this committee, I don't see a pronouncement on the thicknesses of the in-control internal audit function of OMSCO. I don't see risk areas of operations being identified. And I don't see whether you have complied with legal and regulatory provisions. So this is a comment. I think it's a weak internal audit report, and I think it should be improved and not be allowed to go through again in this manner. Then I agree with the CEO about the report of the Auditor General not being unqualified. But, you know, it's good to have an unqualified report, but you must read the report. And the Auditor General and the EOM, Emphasis of Matter, made a very important comment about the going concern. And in the balance of the report on the various pages, I'm talking to page 67 of the Auditor General's report, and again on page 77 of the director's report, you express yourself on the going concern. I think it's just important what the CEO said in the beginning of his presentation, that in the next this financial year, before the end of March, it is going to be very important how this matter of the going concern is going to be handled. I hope you will get to a consensus how to transform. On page 76, you talk about DASU, the Defense Acquisition and Support Organization, but you say you have no reason to believe that Arms Corps will not remain a going concern. What I'm saying, and it's my last question, I just want to get the assurance from the CEO and his team that the going concern that the Auditor General expressed will, to the best of their ability, be satisfied, satisfactory, brought to a conclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Korenhoff. Can I take Mr. Shah?
Thank you, Chairperson. There are several questions, but I will just limit myself to just a few. In the introduction, on your overview, page 3, you mentioned the inadequacy of the Simonstown dockyard to service the newly acquired systems that we have in terms of our LDPs, like the frigates, and that this facility needed to be upgraded, and therefore, I think I heard you say that you're negotiating or having discussions with a possible joint venture with the Germans, am I right? I just wanted to know, Why were the Germans, how did they make the decision? What's the basis of that negotiation there? On the same page, again, you spoke about 15 Hawk aircraft and remaining 7, and you said that's now 8. And that you have requested 2 to remain behind so that they could be upgraded to a new generation technology. Now, several questions arise from that. One is, what are the financial implications and the impact on the existing budget? 2, are we then saying that those that we have acquired previously were not in accordance with investigations that they were of older technology, and now we are doing these 2 upgrades? So what are the basis then of the decision that we made? Then a question flowing from that is, when was this new technology developed? Was it there at the time of us negotiating and contracting that arms deal that we did in terms of the Hawks? If it was there, then why did we go for the older one and now we're thinking about upgrading and experimenting with the new technology? Was it not available then at that time? I don't know if you can answer that one. But remaining with the same thought, on page 17, under studying defense package programs, in terms of your measurement on cash flow, under performance by industry, you come back and make a reference to the Hawk again. Logistic milestones not achieved and conversion of 4 aircraft required in order to bring it to operational capability, and that is not yet complete. Chairperson, what did we purchase it? What is this operational capability that we need to do to bring it up to an operational capability? Then what did we buy? We obviously didn't buy a shell. So what is this new specification that would bring it to operational capability? Why is it not delivered? Why was it not delivered with as per our specifications? What are the financial implications? On the SDP, page 10. You state on page 10 that the to date 11.4 billion, 76% of obligation benefit dependency. Okay. We talk about, time and time again, we hear about the benefits we have achieved this target in terms of DIPs and NIPs, etc. But I have yet to see details of it. I'm not sure whether it was in my absence done, if any member of the committee has seen any details. Because all we hear is that this was the target, this is what we have achieved. This was the target. So what are the details? We need to see that. In terms of placing contracts, that's on page 15 and 17. You say that a lot of your problems are due to the DoD not giving you timeous information about what the requirements are and therefore placing of contracts and that negative impact that it has. It would seem as though, Chairperson, that this issue is an old one. Have you not come up with some mitigating action or some mechanism through which this problem could be resolved? Because it appears again and again. On page 17, the same thing appears again. This lack of timeous information coming from the DoD, and therefore it affects you in terms of placing your contract. So this is an ongoing problem. I think I'm going to leave it at that, Chair, to give others an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Your Honor.
Thank you. I'm on the overview tool, which presented by Mr. Tomo. I would like to know on transformation, what are the major decisions that are to be made by the Minister of Defense? That's one question. Number two, on the transfer of the Sandtown Naval Dockyard, I've heard that the unions were unhappy with that. I would like to know why the unions were unhappy in this transfer. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adrian. Madam Daniel, no matter.
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, although I'm covered, but I'm also tempted to also go back to the question of the goals. What informs these goals? Already, Honorable Chairs dealt with it. The requirements are provided late, but not all the requirements were received in time and all of that. But don't you think it's about time for AMSCO to be proactive in this issue? Because for sure, if these requirements, whether they are provided late or not all received, but you have an idea what is it that is needed. Take for instance an issue of the SANDF being short of ammunition. What happened? Why? That is one thing. Secondly, on a dockyard, someone's done dockyard. I think for over time we've been hearing of the scarcity of skills. And also not having a strategy for retaining the skills. But also we informed some time ago that you were making an effort to go out there and trying to get these skills. But the first instance you get to administer the dockyard, you go out. What happened to what you said you were going to do in trying to get these skills within the country before you going out? And there's something that was said on the value of not materializing. I'm not clear. What does that mean? I need clarity on that. I don't understand what exactly are you talking about when you talk about that. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Jefferson. Mine is on daily. I think for quite some time now, notice must have been made that the current situation of the dairy, the way its location is future. It is indeed Amsco. What is there some, you know, ideas to say what is, because now I'm concluding this, I'm just raising it so that next term, if it also has to do with the budgetary and also to think, to what extent, you know, are plans they in place so that AMSCO itself doesn't also, you know, endlessly become indebted to the problems that are currently faced with the new proposed structure, the structuring of the dairy as structure and where it's located, because that it affects directly the human resource of AMSCO. So I want to find out if are there plans to see how are they looking at salvaging themselves out of it.
Thank you, Mr. Julie.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies for coming late. My name is Mr. Munale. I only need to get the issues around the skill development aspects of AMSCO, because there is somewhere where they say that in terms of composition, at some point the AMSCO will be 95% black. I don't see plans moving towards the direction, so if we can take it on confidence around that, then I will be happy. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Munari.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you very much. My apologies to come 2 minutes late, Jefferson. Thank you very much. 2 minutes late. I was delayed by you. Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at I don't know what slide. Oh, slide number 21 on the human resource. We're talking about equity ownership, blah 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 blah. But we put the percentage on the weight side. Now I'm trying to ask my friend, the learned friend next to me, because he's better qualified than me, to ask him if does he know any goals about this. If you're talking about 30%, 30% of what? If you're talking about 10%, 10% of what? Maybe it will help me to have an explanation of that. The way you put them, you understand them, which I think you understand them better. But I'm trying to compare. We're starting from where we are in this 30%, and we're going where. If there was, there are only two categories that I don't see. From where you come from, where you are now is 30%. But where are you going? What is your target at the end of the day? That's where I have a problem. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to know all this understanding issues. It is said here the understanding was due to late appointment on vacancies. I would like to know whether this late appointment means that it was late because of the report was already compiled, or late on what? Because of I think it's still in the same annual report. Now, I wanted to know that this late member of the thing. Secondly, it is said that the understanding, the positions of women were frozen. You know, it's just that were frozen. That is why they couldn't be appointed. Why were they not appointed? They were frozen. The positions were frozen.
You know, it doesn't say anything. It to me, it sounds as if somebody said, no, we've got this other thing. What can you say? You know, that's when getting the factor that it was frozen. Frozen for what reason? What was the reason for freezing that? Didn't we have people who were killed who could feed into that job? What was happening? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think it's the time now that we, if there's no other members to put the question, then can we hand over to yourself and to respond to the question? So much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. What I'll try and do is we'll try and answer the questions in the order in which they were asked. So for that reason, we'll immediately go to Honorable Korano, who mentioned that AMSCO received 347 million as transfer payment from the DOD. And in the report, there is no mention of whether there has been good value for that money spent. Well, maybe it has been an oversight from myself and the chairman, but I just want to assure Honorable Coroner that there is good value. Actually, the DOD get more value than the money that they give us. What I mean by that is that the level of service that they get is more than the 347 million. We write a service level agreement between us and the Department of Defense. There is a service level agreement that we write which spells very clearly what is it that we need to give them or deliver for the 347 million. And the biggest problem that we have is that we are increasingly asked to assist in areas which are not covered by the service level agreement. We've got a service level agreement, but increasingly we get asked that, please, can you help in these areas? Can you help in these areas which are not covered by the service level agreement? So, I don't know, maybe what we will try and do in future is to also report on the service level agreement so that the committee can see what is happening in that regard and see how the money is being spent. But we have got a service level agreement, so we'll, in future, maybe we'll do that as one of the objectives. We will include that. And
it's not a contractual agreement, because I hear you stand saying you end up now complying, I take it, because there are these demands. So then say, please implement something that is out of the contract. Your service-level agreement with the department, you comply. Are you suggesting that you end up complying to do that?
Chair, we end up complying, yes. When you've got only one customer, the relationship is everything. So we try and go the extra mile to assist the client where we have to, or where the client asks us to assist.
Is that not a favor?
Well, it could be interpreted as a favor, but from us, we see it as providing good service to the client.
Legally speaking, is it correct?
Well, legally speaking, yes. If we don't have to do it, then we do it. It is a favor.
But it should be in your service level agreement.
What I'm talking about small peripheral issues which...
Peripheral, as long as it involves that I'm attacking.
What kind of flexibility? Because I think the chairperson wants it, at the end of the day, it's money. What kind of flexibility do you have in what we're discussing now? Because if there is a flexibility of a million or more on top of this money that Dr. Coroner was talking about, then at the end of the day, you'll have a problem, financial problem. I think that is why we want to know, the friendship is fine, service agreement is fine, if you comply to all of them. But I think the chairperson is asking the flexibility.
what kind of flexibility you have, and does not affect the financial capability at the end of the day.
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand the question when you are asking what flexibility. But let me try and maybe help you understand what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is there are certain things that we need to deliver in terms of the first level agreement. But what is also happening on the periphery is that if you look at AMSCO and the DOD, there are clear processes of how we need to do the work that we do. The DOD, they sit down and decide what requirements they want, what capabilities they want, when do they want them, what technologies do they want them, do they want in those things. They do all those studies, and then when they finish, then they say, AMSCO, this is what we want. Now take what we give you, and now interpret it into engineering. As to now, what should be the specification, what should the equipment be like, and this and this, and go and buy the equipment, administer the tender process, come back and recommend the solution that we must have, and demonstrate to us that this solution that you are recommending meets our requirements. Now, what I'm saying is, that's what the service level reflects. Now, what I'm saying is, we are beginning, because of the erosion of capability in the DOD, we are beginning to assist them in also developing the requirements. We are beginning to work into those areas which are there for them to assist them that, okay, let's try and do this in the requirement, let's try and do this so that we finish it in time, so that we are able to contract. Those are some of the things that I'm talking about.
The question was, the DOD transferred 347.6 million, which is less than they allocated. They allocated 396.3 million. But transferred was 347.6 million. It was on the slides by Mr. Hoffman. Okay? What this committee, as the oversight committee, wants to know, whether there was value for money for the 347.6. If that is embodied into a written document as a service level agreement, that's fine. All we're saying is for the oversight, it's good that either the CEO or the chair expresses himself or herself on the value achieved for the DOD. What the chair is asking, if there was anything outside that service level agreement and outside the 347.6, then we need to know about it and to know the detail that somebody asked earlier. What was the deviation, for what amount, and detail on that one. And that's what you were referring to in your reply. What the committee is saying, if there's a deviation, you need to unpack it in the annual report.
Thank you. What? Okay. And the deviation is not, like I said, the deviation is expressed in the service that we render to the DOD. We haven't expressed it in monetary terms. And to answer the question of Honorable Korenov directly, I'm saying we haven't done so, me and the chairman, and we will specifically include comments about the value for money with reference to the service level agreement.
Which I've been trying to get around the, you see, there is this thing called co-business of AMSCO. And every time I get any report from AMSCO, I don't get at the core of that answer. So, because yeah, at some point there were a lot of things coming in around. You know, there is a building, defense, DOD building is AMSCO's building. The dockyard, Simon Town, is now AMSCO. And they are in the restructuring objectives that they have set, that they will stick strictly to their core business. So I wonder if that question could be answered.
I think you have captured that. But let's then proceed. I think you have captured that question. Can you then proceed with the line of questioning made by Mr. Cole?
Thank you, Chair. And then there was the issue of the infantry combat vehicles project, which we call Project Roof Esther, which Honorable Koronov said was concluded in May, which is outside the reporting period. It is true, but we have spent most of the negotiations during the time under review. But now the issue of why the Parliament was not told about it. The only answer I could give is that we report on projects that we've got a contract which we have finalized the negotiations on. It will be difficult for us to report on issues that we are still negotiating on, because now the suppliers that we are negotiating with will be privy to what we are doing. So it is for that reason that you are seeing it for the first time now. And though it was outside the reporting period, we felt that it was a big project which warrants the Parliament to know about it. And most probably you must have heard about it also from TINEL, because as soon as we finalized the negotiations, they went to the media. And I remember even Minister Ewen was the one to announce it to the media when the deal was concluded. So I hope that answer is adequate for the Honorable Member. And then the issue of the weak internal audit report. Well, in terms of...
Sorry, Chair, it's not the internal audit report. I'm referring to the audit committee.
Okay.
Not the internal audit report. I'm referring to page 65, the audit committee report.
I can just mention that the audit committee, we do have problems with the audit committee. And then the problem largely stems from this hanging cloud, which is hanging above AMSCO, which is related to transformation. And then the biggest problem that we have had is that at some stage, the minister and the Secretary for Defense were of the opinion that the board of AMSCO should be dissolved and there should be no board. And subsequently, people who were members of the audit committee, some of them, actually the chairperson thereof, her term came to the end and she was not happy to renew her term. And then we were without the chairman, and then because of the background, there being the possibility that we may not have a board, it was very difficult to get new people to come and join the organization as board members, because the large portion of our board members are non-executive. There are only two executive board members, which is myself and Mr. Hoffman. The rest are non-executive. So there was that uncertainty, but I accept that the issue of the members not being mentioned and all those other comments that were made by Honorable Koronov, that those are a shortcoming on the way we have reported about it. But the issue of the audit committee members, we still have a few. They are not as many as we'd like them to be. But I think things will start improving when I tell you about what is going to happen about the transformation going forward. Do you want to get something?
Jay, now, this has nothing to do with the transformation. This is to do with a report in a certain financial year. And this report was signed by Mrs. Malope on the 21st of June. If you go to page 77 of your director's report, you mentioned some three non-executive directors, two independent, one independent resigned, the chair resigned. You yourself, the CEO and the CFO, do attend meetings, but you have no idea whether you've attended any meetings or you've attended all the meetings. How often do they meet? If the detail is not there in the oversight, in the guidelines by the National Treasury, there's clear guidelines how to report. In your report, you've not adhered to the guidelines. In the last paragraph of page 74, it says what the committee focuses on, very specifically. But the committee doesn't report on the focuses. So I think it's a weakness, and I stand by the point.
If I can just add, I think the report itself on page 65 was done in terms of the minimum requirements of the accounting practices. I take the point that it can be expanded, but the information on the attendance of the audit committee, that is on page 73, and on page 74 there's also information on some more information on audit and risk management committee. I think the information is available. There was the audit committee meet regularly and they've done their work properly. I don't think there's anything wrong on their side. But we take the point that they can expand on the report this. But it was also discussed with the Auditor General and it said this is the sort of requirement that the report on page 65 should just make a statement from the chairperson. But take the point.
Can I suggest that the ASCO go to the National Treasury guidelines for reporting on audit committees and adhere to the guidelines that are issued by the National Treasury and not rely on the Auditor General only. There are clear guidelines by the National Treasury what should be incorporated into an audit committee report. It's on record. And to argue about it and to say it's a minimum requirement is not the issue. The issue is there are requirements by National Treasury for each public entity and for each national department to report on in their committee report. And all I'm saying is not reported here. And if it's reported, it's staggered somewhere in the report. Combine it and report neatly in one report and say this is the situation. And if there's nothing to report, you state it. If there are problems, you state it. Thank you.
Do you want to reflect and
respond
to?
No, Chair, we will do as the Honourable Member comments. We will go and look at the Treasury guidelines. And then finally, the Honourable Koranov mentioned the Auditor General's mentioning of transformation as a growing concern. And then, yes, that issue was raised, and largely it revolved around the process of transformation of AMSCO. At that stage, it was largely run by the department, and AMSCO's involvement was very hands-off. And the reason for that was that the transformation was mentioned in terms of instruction, the minister giving instruction of certain things that need to happen. But that has subsequently changed now. What has happened is that the minister has asked AMSCO to do a full investigation, AMSCO and the DOD, Department of Science and Technology, and DPE, to jointly do an investigation of how the transformation should be done and make recommendations to him. And he has been very clear as to the issues that the minister wants that must be looked at. And unfortunately, by the end of this financial year, the implementation would not have taken place. But fortunately, the picture will be clearer
in terms of what needs to be done. And then we hope that this issue will then improve. Because as we have seen when we report on it, it has caused a lot of uncertainty when it comes to employees. Some people have, we report especially in AMSCO business that some people have resigned and this and this. But now, the way it is going, it will allow us to give our the AMSCO employees assurance in terms of how the process is being managed. But I am satisfied that the things have improved in that direction.
I think it's just important to note that in this emphasis of matter, the Auditor General draws attention to the transforming of AMSCO and the impact that it will have on the future of the group. And I just hope that AMSCO, with the other role players, will have to deal very precise with it. Otherwise, this emphasis of matter may go into a qualification, if not handled properly in the next financial year. That's all we're saying. And I wish AMSCO well to manage the transformation of AMSCO and to have a positive impact on the future of the group. That's all the Auditor General is saying. But I think it's worthwhile to take seriously note of this emphasis of matter.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And then now we go to the issues raised by the Honorable Shah. The first issue related to why negotiate with the Germans for the dockyard upgrade. And, we are not necessarily negotiating with the Germans. I said we are talking to European companies. And the European companies that we are talking to, we haven't finalized anything yet, but we are looking at different proposals. And with a view of getting those proposals to address some of the issues that we want to see addressed. And then, like I said earlier on, those issues revolve around upgrading of equipment, the issues of building a training center at the dockyard to train technical people, and then the issues of improving efficiencies and all those related issues. You would understand that in doing so, that issue, there's a lot of money that needs to be spent. And these companies are making their own demands in terms of when we bring this investment, what do we get? And then how they package it, who they want to bring on board. And in this country, we will remember that there are issues of black economic empowerment. There needs to be some, at some stage, a black economic empowerment brought on board. So we're still addressing a myriad of those issues. And then we're looking at the different proposals that are put by different people. And I just want to stop there because the process is still ongoing. I wouldn't like to say things that I would be unhappy about when I see them in the meeting. Okay. Let me go to the next issue. That is the issue of financial implications of upgrading the two Hawks. Was the previous technology not good enough? Why the upgrade now? What are the financial implications? Let me ask Mr. Mkwana to answer that one in more detail. I don't know if Mr. Shea, who knows this thing, actually maybe even more than I do, would also want to add a few words.
No, sorry, General Shea.
It's because he's wearing a suit today.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the Hawk, which is stated in the report that 16 at the time of writing the report were delivered, and 7 was to be delivered at that point in time. But in total, there's supposed to be 24 delivered to the staff. So this is why we're talking now of 8. If you look at 16 plus 8, it's 24. But at the time of writing the report, we're saying that 16 has been delivered and 7 were to be delivered in October. We're talking about the second milestone in October. But now, talking about what has transpired right now, we're saying that of the 8 that is still out, that is, was still outstanding, the decision was made that they were delivered with the operational capability of two. We've got a baseline. Let me just try and explain in terms of what you mean by this operational capability. We've got a specification of the system in which it must be delivered. As we accepted the system, it was found that they couldn't meet fully the specification of the software for the avionics. So the agreement was that we would accept the system at a baseline which we call the baseline operational capability base OC1, and then they would upgrade the capability to operational capability 2, and then finally meet the total specification of the system at operational capability 3. So what we are saying is that the agreement now is that the 6 will be received at the agreed capability of operational capability 2 in terms of the software of the avionics. The other two will be sort of put aside so that they are ready to upgrade it fully to operational capability 3, the other two. Bearing in mind that as soon as that has been done, then you also upgrade the other systems to meet the required specification. Meaning that there is no financial implication because it's a contractual matter. They've got to meet that contractual obligation in terms of the specification. But in terms of accepting the system, we agreed with the BAE system that in view of the fact that what they couldn't meet in terms of the software, at that point in time for the staff, it's not a requirement. You can be in a position to operate the system while they are upgrading the software to operational capability 2 and then operational capability 3, which is the final required specification of the system. So there is no financial commitment in terms of increasing the contract. It's within the contract. It's within the specification. They just couldn't meet the specification. So we accepted the system without having them meet the specification. But we've got a baseline where we say we accept the system at this baseline, which is operational capability 1. As soon as they're able now to upgrade it to operational capability 2, we accept that baseline. And then finally accept the total requirement having met of the system and say now the total acceptance now has been met by the supplier, and it's within the contract.
Are you the general?
Thank you, Chief. I think this is shedding a bit more light, but not entirely. When we did the contract to purchase the Hawk, did we give them a specification and the pricing that was put to the Hawk? Did it match at that time with our initial, call it OC1, O2, O3, at which level did we do the deal with them? And at that point in time, did we make a comparison with the pricing put on the Hawk, and at which level was it being sold to other countries? And did we not then buy it at the lower level as compared to other countries that were buying it with it at level 2, level 3, whatever that is? That's what I'm trying to determine. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, to you, I think there was a little bit of misconception here. What we have contracted was the state-of-the-art Hawk capability, which BAE Systems could not meet at the time at which they had to deliver all the aircraft. That led to a contractual amendment where BAE Systems was formally penalized for late delivery, and as a recovery strategy, we agreed to receive some of the aircraft because the Impala had to be phased out, they were at the end of their life. And we then took on an initial batch of hawks, an initial batch of 8, which was subsequently increased to 16, at a reduced level of functionality, with very clear contractual terms and conditions that BAE Systems and the local company ADE and the NEL had to in fact accelerate the recovery strategy to meet the full terms of the contract. So what we are achieving is exactly what we contracted at a very clear value for money, which was really the leading hawk capability in the world at the time. So we are receiving exactly what we contracted, but BAE had to be penalized for late delivery, and they are now meeting that obligation they took.
Thank you. As you hear the bells ringing, from the chair, I'm proposing that
And if you don't ask some questions about the answer, you'll never get answered.
Chairperson of the Joint Select Committee. Mrs. Kuman. I mean, I think when I say I'm introducing him, you haven't seen that face this morning, have you? You haven't. So I'm introducing him. It's the reason he's seated more or less at the very same spot where we share the corner of our seated. Mrs. Kuman. I think members, we are just ready. And you may start, Baba La Policia. We were still dealing with a question by Mrs. Shah, and you were responding to the hook issue. If you can round up that one so that we can get to other speakers, the other questions that were posed, if I may remind you, Mr. Fiale, Madam Daniel, Manir Munare, Dade Moate, Dade Nduli, Dade Nduli. So those are some that I think in your order, you have them in your list. So we're only going to run up until 10 to 2, if we can then be cautious of time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue of the hawk, when we broke, just completed. So I'll go to the next issue, which relates to Honorable Shah raised the issue relating to the receiving of the requirement late, because that is the issue that we have, actually that was responsible for us not meeting our target, which relates to the service level agreement. Fortunately, we have in our midst General Otto Shea. They are the ones who prepare the requirements to bring them to AMSCO. I think he'll be in the best position to comment on the issue of what is being done to try and correct this problem, because as Honorable Shea has indicated, this problem has been coming over for a few years now. General?
Mr. Chair, through you, I think the issue of late order placements in Arms Corps has its origins in the fact that the Department of Defense for a number of years has been under severe budgetary pressure. Especially on the operating side. However, on the capital side, there were also uncertainties in terms of where the department was going.
Yes, sorry, Mr. General. And I think, can you switch off your mic?
It was also important to take note of the new demands of missions that were allocated to the Department of Defense in peace support operations that had a fundamental influence on the material requirements of the department. Hence, with the budget pressure on the department, we had to first of all make sure that those commitments could be met before we committed other orders. That delayed, in fact, some of the requirements. What is also important to take note is, in times of uncertainty, we could not commit to multi-year maintenance orders or large expansions of military equipment. These have now been resolved effectively. We have a very clear understanding of the defense budget. Certainly, we have a very clear understanding also of where the defense update needs to take this department. And based on that, both the capital acquisition requirements as well as the operating budget requirements have now been far more formalized than in the past. It will also authorize us to place multi-year orders for maintenance as well as then the renewal programs. Just one comment maybe on the infantry combat vehicle that was answered to some extent. I believe the reason why that order was not placed in the 6 or 7 year as was planned was that the single offer that was brought by a consortium led by Danel had the intent to spend 70% of the budget externally, and only 30% of that budget would have been spent in the country. Through the intervention of Arms Corps, once we knew that there was a single offer on the table, we were authorized to go and negotiate with Danel. In that negotiation, we turned the ratio around almost effectively, with 69.5% of the orders now going to South African companies, and only 30% of the contract value that will be spent overseas. I think it was a fundamental intervention which led to a cash flow delay, but which has really afforded the maximum opportunity for local industry to really gain benefit of that, And in the negotiations, we were able to effectively reduce the potential order value from 13.5 billion to about 8.5 billion rand. So I think it was a massive saving for the state as well in that regard. So through that intervention, I think we get value for money, and certainly making sure that as much money as we can is spent in local industry to really influence local job creation and wealth creation. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I just want to check if we have the names of those companies which got 9% of the job inside the country.
Mr. Chair, if I may quickly respond, I don't think it is probably our right, because the main contract or the contract that is placed is on the Nel land system, but we can certainly, through ArmsCorps sort of contracting department, request the Nel land systems to provide that list into the portfolio committee. I'm sure that they will have no problem. But we have in fact raised that point already with them.
Okay, thank you, Jella. And then that now wraps up the issues that were raised by Honorable Shah. And then now we go to the issues that were raised by Honorable Diaz.
I want to make a follow-up.
Okay.
Thank you, Jen. Sorry, the food in my mouth. I think you forgot the issue of the SDB in terms of lips and dips. We keep getting targets. This target has been met, but we haven't seen details. That is one. But on a follow-up to what the General said, Chairperson, it seems as though, which is true, the peace and border operations has impacted on the DOD. And what happens is within the DOD then obviously flows from there, and then it affects the arms corps. But then that would, Chair, bring us to another concern then. Peace and border operations policy policy direction comes in foreign policy, and we're supporting it. Now, what we heard is that the DOD is now, or the SDF, is going to be restructured. And the army is going to be restructured between 2008 and to around 2012. Now, if peace support operations had an impact on DOD, which then flowed to the arms, the question to ask, when the restructuring takes place, obviously it will affect force design and all of those things. Is the arms corps then geared or ready to meet those requirements if and when those restructuring is completed? Because if peace support operations can have that effect, can you imagine what restructuring would have? Thank you.
One point around peace operations. I want that point to be treated with the caution it deserves, precisely because it's what we get from AMSCO. We will, as a committee, have the benefit of that if the peace support operations were a delay, because some of the answers you get, obviously, if DOT is not here, it may be difficult to get that. If that was hamstrung by the issue on peace operations, we know that. Because in the past 3-4 years, peace operations were not planned for in terms of the DOD strategies, you see. So, but if AMSCO says that, then we need a confirmation from DOD.
Yeah, truly, there are some issues that cannot be responded to by AMSCO. But I think then let's zoom in into, even the preparedness, because the question of the restructuring is not done by AMSCO.
If I can clarify, the point I'm making is I do understand that there are things that they can answer, so DOD needs to answer. But the point I'm making is when DOD makes policy decisions, it obviously they have some, then they're going to look to ArmsCo for support. Now, the question I'm asking is, in view of the restructuring that is happening or is likely to be completed by 2012, let's see, is ArmsCo geared to meet those requirements which are going to flow from that restructuring process, because brigades will be different, our whole force design will be different, our whole setup. So the point is...
No. Once again, you are preempting, because there are service level agreements. The department will decide. Thanks.
You may proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. But just to say something about this issue is that in AMSCO's strategic planning session, which we went to when we couldn't come here, the DOD comes there and presents their strategies and the directions where they are going. And subsequently, AMSCO starts planning to be able to meet the strategies and the issues that are coming from the DOD, because we exist primarily to serve them. So we need to know what they are doing so that we design ourselves and prepare ourselves to be able to meet what is coming from the direction of the DOD. Okay, thank you. Honorable Chair, I think Honorable Chair Shah was right. There was one point that I missed, which relates to the DIP and NIP. The NIP, as you know, is managed by the trade and industry. And as AMSCO, we are in a position to report about the DIP. But we didn't bring any details of which company has benefited from this. In line with what has been raised about the companies that have benefited from WUF-ACER, we will try and make that information available to the company as to the portfolio committee secretary. Thank you, sir. And then now going to Honorable Diallo's question. He raised two issues. The first one related to transformation. And then he wanted to know what measures decisions must be taken by the minister as far as the transformation issue is concerned. And as I've said, as I've indicated earlier, what the minister would like to see is that we split AMSCO into two, the one part being acquisition, the other one becoming the dairy, and consolidate the dairy into capabilities, dairy-related capabilities from the CSIR and DINER. Currently, we are writing, I said the minister has asked for a desktop study as to what the organization must look like and how must it be funded, how must it protect its intellectual property and all those related issues. And when we get there, we are going to make specific recommendations based on overseas experience or international experience, make certain recommendations to the minister, and the minister will make those decisions. So at this stage, that desktop investigation has just been started. The first report is going to be available on the 15th of November, and then from there we'll try and get to the earliest slot possible to the minister to look at it. It's normally not him alone, it's him, the Minister of DPE and the Minister of Science and Technology. That's the best answer that I could give. And then the second question related to the dockyard. And Mr. Diallo, Honorable Diallo wanted to know why were the unions unhappy. And then the unions were unhappy because we had a bit of a situation where in preparing to transfer the dockyard to AMSCO, we have always dealt with the union and the dockyard itself. We did not involve the leadership of the union. And the leadership of the union at that stage felt that they didn't have sufficient knowledge. They didn't have sufficient knowledge on the Tokyo transfer. And they also wanted to know the effect of the AMSCO transformation and what effect is it going to have on the document. And as a result, they asked for all the documents relating to the document transfer. What service level agreement does the Navy have with AMSCO? What documents have been signed to transfer the document? Under which laws is it being done? And all those documents were made available to the union. They looked at it and withdraw their objection, and subsequently the document was then transferred to AMSCO. Thank you. And then Honorable Daniels raised three issues. The first one related to goals. She wanted to know what informs the goals that we report on,
and she wanted to know why AMSCO was not proactive on solving the DoD requirement problem. I think General Scher has now answered the issue on the DoD requirements, and then the issue of what informs the AMSCO goals. What we normally do is, as AMSCO, we would go away on a strategic session. We will get researchers to come and brief AMSCO as to what is happening in the world about security, what is happening in Africa, and then get the DoD to come and brief us about what they are doing in the DoD, like these changes that we've spoken about. And then they must also, we ask them to also tell us what they are doing about acquisition. What do they see happening next year? What directions are they going to? And then we also look at ourselves as AMSCO internally, what are the issues that they were grappling with? And we put all those together and make a decision and come up with certain specific strategies that we will follow. And then, as a result of the strategies that we will follow, we break them down into chunks that we can do each year, if at all they need to be implemented over a period to be able to achieve the results. And then subsequently we make them goals and then we start implementing. And then we contract each other on the goals. Another was an issue also about the dockyard. Why go out of South Africa to get skills to run the dockyard when the skills are here in South Africa? The reason we are looking at companies which are overseas is because here in South Africa, we don't know of anyone who has run the dockyard. Because the dockyard at Simonstown here in South Africa is currently the only dockyard. You've got a few commercial ports and this, but a military dockyard, that is the only one, after they've closed the one in Durban. So, to be able to give the Navy a respectable service, we need to link up with people who know exactly what they are doing. We have been doing this thing for years. It is for that reason that we are linking up with them. And if you listen to what I said earlier, I said we are going to build a technical training school there, so that we develop our own people, so that with time, those relationships that we have with these people, they start withdrawing and the skills transfer happen with our own people, so that we are able to run our dockyards, the dockyards on our own. So we feel that as AMSCO, on our own, we haven't run the dockyards previously. It would make sense that we start partnering with people who have done it successfully in other countries. And then finally, there was an issue about some HR related issue. Mr. Magoti.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. The issues were raised, the first one was raised by Honorable Monaren.
No, I wanted to respond to the one raised by Honorable Dani.
Which one is that one?
One that really of not materializing.
Yeah, no, I missed it because I was still writing something. I don't know if... You got it?
Well, why don't we ask the honourable member to repeat the question? It relates to the value not materializing. I think you said something of that nature. But what is still going through the... You spoke about the dockyard and the... sourcing the access from outside. What happened to the people running our doctors in South Africa? The two doctors, one in Devon and the one in Devon.
Chair, what I'm talking about, I'm not talking about the people who are doing the work on the ground. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people who are running and managing the dockyard. Well, the dockyard was... The people who were running the dockyard in Durban,
I don't know what happened because the dockyard there has closed and quite a while back, and it used to be run by the Navy. And then now, the people who were running the dockyard here in Simonstown, we have them, but the biggest problem, maybe I need to share this with you, the biggest problem why the Navy wants to give the dockyard to AMSCO is that there are largely two problems. The first one is that the procurement system that they had in government, they were saying is taking too long to be able to get the spares and things like those, because I believe they had to have a procurement system where the people who are buying are not the people who are fixing the ships. What I mean by that is that if you want a spare valve, then you would send to the buyer and say, please try and get out this spare valve. And then they look at the valve and they look at the specification that they've written. They say, but so-and-so can supply it at a third of the price. And then they go and buy it there. You come and bring it here. It's not exactly the same thing. It doesn't fit. You send it back, and that process used to take a long time, and subsequently, the ships could not afford it to be out of service for that long. So they said, we want an organization which is agile and flexible, which, if processes, we allow it to buy this thing within 2 days or 3 days and come and fix it. That is the one thing. And then the second thing related to when it was owned by the Navy, the issue of skill. That you can only get people and pay them so much as prescribed by the public service. That you can pay this person so much, you can't pay them so much because of the job categories of the government. And subsequently, they were having huge problems of retaining skills as far as those issues are concerned. So they are saying, please, we want you can pay your people competitive salary scales. So we want you to be able to attract and retain people to be able to service this thing. So the skills that were there have gradually been eroded, and the people are doing other things now and servicing the boating and other related industries around Cape Town and this area. Okay, thank you. Okay, then I'll go to the issue that was raised by Honorable Ntuli about the dairy. He said he wanted to know how AMSCO is going to address this issue of a dairy and extricate itself from this problem. Like I said earlier on, the minister has now asked AMSCO to be part of the planning session as far as the issue of the dairy is concerned. And we are comfortably participating. We don't feel that there is any concern to be. We don't see any problems as far as that is concerned. And we are looking at what other people are doing in the world. And what the minister is asking for is actually common practice that dairies are now consolidated, that capabilities like the ones in AMSCO and the CSR are normally being consolidated into dairies. So we don't have a problem with that. And I hope my words are short and honorable to
you. You want to write?
No, I think I welcome the response, Chairperson. My concern is that, I think the chair, the Mr. Tomo remembers that one of the things when he talks of dairy, but when you look at the staffing, the type of the specific needs of AMSCO, the expertise that it has. It has been alluded here earlier to us that there is a problem with regard to that because the uncertainty. Now, the point I'm trying to get at is, if you say they are comfortable now with the Georgia or the ministry, they are managing it, but to what extent are time frames here so that it could allay the fears of now the suffering within the AMSCO? So this endless, loss
of the skin could be retained, looking at the basic primary function of the AMSCO, so that AMSCO still lives up to the act that established it. Thanks.
Okay, Chair. Now, as far as that is concerned, well, what I've said is that now we are participating in the process and we are giving our input. That goes a long way to allay the fears, but the fears don't disappear completely. Because the question that Honorable Dulu has asked, we are not in a position to answer it yet. Because I said the first report is going to be released on the 15th of November, or around that time. And when we get that report and we get the minister's approval, then it's only then that we would know what would happen to the implementation. And what is Honorable Tulu is calling for is the implementation of what is going to happen by what time. We haven't reached that stage where the situation is clear, but hopefully in 2 weeks' time, things will be clearer and we will be able to give more positive feedback which will address the fears and uncertainty. So, Honorable Tulu, we can only give that information around 2 weeks' time after we've got the report and prepare it for the ministers.
We will follow that if that is recorded.
Okay, and then and the next questions were raised by Honorable Munaring. He raised a question and then later raised a question on a follow-up when we're talking, addressing the issues of Honorable Coronel. The first question that he raised was, how is AMSCO planning to be 95, how is AMSCO planning to achieve 95% black representation? Actually, AMSCO has not said they want to be 95% they don't want to, that the staff of AMSCO, 95% of it should be black. What the report was saying is that when we appoint people from outside, because AMSCO has got this legacy of having been a predominantly white Africana male environment, where the majority of the people are white African male, what we said is that, and because these people have got very special critical skills that we need, we cannot run that organization without their skills. So we have decided that we are not going to retrench anyone because we need those skills. What we are going to do is when we employ people from outside, we are going to make sure that 80% of people that we employ from outside, when we have got vacancies, those people are black people. So what has happened is that in the previous year, the year under our review, we gave ourselves a target of 80% and we reached a target of 95%. So we've exceeded our target. I hope I have answered the Honorable Munaring adequately. And there was also the issue of...
There is a document here. It's not your document. It's our document. It says that achieved its goal of attaining 95% black appointees.
What page is that there?
You don't have this document. This one.
Yes,
I'm saying what page? It's on page 5.
Actually, if you read what is written there, it articulates exactly what I've just said.
Okay. So, you can proceed, it's fine. As long as I'm convinced by Babando, it's fine.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And then?
There's a question that's coming from the
thank you, Chair. That was remarkable, Mr. Tom. But within that 95%, how much of skill transfer has been done? The people that came in, the skills that you have retained, how much have you managed to transfer skills in that process?
Thank you, Chairperson. With all the people that we appoint, we normally draw up some orientation program, and it depends on the background of the people, also the person, in terms of the experience that they have and the type of work environment that they've been working in. And so that determines how comprehensive that program is supposed to be. So with every person that comes in, for them just to be able to operate, there needs to be some orientation program geared towards skills transfer.
But also, we try and employ people who can do the job immediately. That is the first prize. To get somebody who is ready, who is able to do the job. But it's not always possible. And subsequently, we've got a mentorship scheme in the organization where the people who are about to leave, we get them to mentor the people who've just joined the organization so that when they leave, at least there has been a knowledge transferred to the new people who have been employed and staying in the organization. Okay, and then the Honorable Munarim also raised an issue of what is the core business of AMSCO, or the core mandate of AMSCO. The core mandate of AMSCO is in the AMSCO Act. And the AMSCO Act clearly articulates what is it that AMSCO is allowed to do, what is it that AMSCO is not allowed to do, and what is it that AMSCO, if it wants to do certain things which is not in its mandate, then it must get permission from the minister. So unfortunately, again, I can't give a precise answer, but in the Act, the mandate is very clear. So I hope I'll leave it there, Honorable Munari. And then,
thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. I think the background of his question, not that he doesn't know what AMSCO is doing, but I think he was basing on the service the service that you do with the DOD. I think that's where the question lies. That you have this in the Act that you are supposed to do, and you have this service that you have to do with your client, or which is one of your main client. I think that's where it comes in. He says, therefore, where is your core business out of these two? I think that's where, if I'm wrong, you may correct me. Because you remember when the Chairperson and I wanted to do the follow-up of your flexibility. We were waiting for you to say there was no flexibility, straightforward, it's a straitjacket. Now we will know that you are talking about the Act. But now there is a service provider with the DOT. Now, that's where it comes in. Where is the core business? Is it this side or is it this side? But he may correct me if I'm wrong.
Now, what I'm trying to say is that there is somewhere in your report where you said you've got 2.6 million, which you achieved out of your other adversaries, I think. What is the term? Yeah, other businesses. Yeah, so I know that when we started here, there was that confusion, and you were saying that because you got a new mission and mandate, that mandate would only concentrate in providing service to the Department of Defense in terms of procurement and acquisition. So then there was somewhere where you were saying that you do have you've acquired over the years, you know, big buildings like your issue of the DOD, and now you are going to get the dockyard, which when I read from here, it is transferred by the Department of Defense, not yourselves. So I'm just trying to check that there. And again, there is this thing called the transformation of the DOD, which also suggests the transformation of AMSCO. So in that process, are you going to continue with other businesses, or you are going to strictly stick to your core business or core mandate?
Okay, thank you, Chair. The way we run AMSCO, we run it as three separate legs. The one leg is acquisition. The other leg is what we call AMSCO business, but it's the party that is going to be part of the dairy. And then the third leg now is the dockyard. So we run them as three separate business divisions. And if you look at the acquisition leg or division, that one is focused 100% on giving the acquisition service to the DOD. And Honorable Joe spoke about two issues, about the Act and the Service Level Agreement. The Service Level Agreement actually has been taken out of the Act. So it's an extract of the Act. So there's no conflict between the Service Level Agreement and the Act. They actually complement one another. Because the Act is a supreme document, the Service Level Agreement is based on the Act. And then when it comes to the dairies give service to the DOD largely, but they also sell things to the rest of the world, do a lot of other things which are not entirely defense related, and that's where we generate a bit of additional income from there. And as far as that is concerned, what is going to happen to those activities is going to be informed by this transformation and the formation of the dairy. So that one is going to be removed from AMSCO and become part of something new. And then the dockyard, I said, we have ring-fenced it. It will focus on the maintenance of the ships of the Navy. And then that will be the primary task. But with time, because that facility is huge, you find that the ships are still new, they don't need that much maintenance, the facility is there, is huge, we might do also work that is not necessarily that of the Navy. We can fix ships for other people if they so wish, because occasionally we get asked, maybe by the English or the French, that our ship is going to be passing South Africa, can it stop at the dockyard for maintenance, please? And then from there to proceed, we will look at some of those issues. Okay. Thank you, sir. And I hope that disposes of the question.
I think I read something about you being now Schedule 3 entity. I think it talks to that. You, if you may just briefly indicate to us as to what challenges that we experience and how far in addressing that, because now you are now able to trade, I think.
So
Schedule 3 also provides that, of the Constitution.
Yes, sir, we are not Schedule 3 yet. When the transformation is completed, it looks like we will go in that direction. We are currently a Schedule 2, and currently, being a Schedule 2, we are allowed to do that as well. But that's why I said we are talking to people to look at what we can do, but we haven't really started going in that direction. But in the area of AMSCO business, which is going to become a dairy, we have started doing private work, like testing ammunition for countries like Singapore and other countries in the world. We test ammunition for Singapore. We test cars for Porsche. We test cars for Tata. And all those things. But obviously, when we become a dairy, those things might come to an end. But because of where the Schedule 2, we still are able to do those issues. But that would amount to about 20% of what we do. 80% is still focused in the DOD.
Linking to what the CEO just said and what we referred to earlier on the facility that was sold in Durban, the naval facility, and if I remember correctly, the general myself, but previously the Simonstown was a naval base, and that was scaled down to a facility. I don't have the terms. And in your arms school business, you have certain strategic facilities. They're listed here from page 41. Now, in this transformation, I think we as an oversight committee must have an open relationship also with arms school, but also with the DOD. Somewhere early, before it's concluded early next year, that we just get a briefing on strategic facilities in the DOD, including arms school. You see, in this transformation, we may lose something that we say we shouldn't have lost that. Now, I don't know how you want to handle it, Chair, but we have to, coming from this briefing, that we have to protect strategic facilities, both in the DOD and Arms Corps, for future generations. Somewhere we have to make a note that we have to address it early in 2008, if it's not too late. I hope not.
You want to...
Sorry, Mr. Chair, if I may just briefly respond, I think this touches on the cabinet memorandum that is currently being prepared on the South African defense-related industry, which will be speaking to the wider SADRI component of manufacturing capacity. It will, however, also speak to what the department deems to be of strategic importance to do its core business. In that, it will reassess, and we have done this with specifically Department of Public Enterprises and the DTI, who one are oversight of the wider industrial potential, but DPE specifically of the Denel subset of the defense-related industry. In that, we will pronounce on which components, and it's usually those components that are not commercially viable that we will have to protect strategically, like, for instance, missile manufacture or heavy ammunition, because these are really core to being able to execute our military mandate. It will also speak to the issue of strategic technology areas that will be of fundamental importance either to the Department of Defense to do its business or to position local industry in such a way that it can optimally participate in new acquisition programs or maintenance of existing equipment. And this document is now going through its final review. We are actually, it was prepared as a cabinet memorandum initially, and it then grew to an 18-page, 20-page monster. We are now extracting the cab memo from a formal strategy, and we will append the strategy to the cabinet memorandum. It should be available probably by the end of this year. That, I think, will address, and I think this portfolio committee needs to be fully informed on the outcome of that document.
No, we have a separation of powers, the executive and parliament. We are the legislature. And I think it's not the same process. It's two processes. I just want to make the point, somewhere after the cabinet memorandum has gone its walk, we need to be informed or discuss and to see separately with Arms Corps, the DOD, what are the strategic facilities and how to protect them.
You want to add on this?
Thank you. I was also going on that. Do you perhaps, as Arms Corps, advise these two arms, Parliament and the Executive? Take, for instance, the naval base in Devon. According to my own opinion, that was very strategic, but that was given to MTA. And that was not only strategic for South Africa, but for the southern African countries. Economy, and look where it is now. Thank you.
And let's agree before you respond that we agree as a committee that we will take and follow that proposal that is made by the member. We will be engaging with the department and yourself in due course regarding this particular aspect. It's quite correct. These are two arms. And understanding that there is that cabinet memo, we also interrogate that. Because everything that informs what the department wants to, we end up with here. So that is why I think that is quite important for us as a committee. I'm referring to the committee that we shared your matters before March is coming in. But it does not then say we must not begin secretary to get as much information, appreciating what the general has said, but let's get more information about it so that we can begin to interrogate it. But over to you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I think what Honorable Goranoff is raising is an important thing because despite the document that the General is talking about, there are certain capabilities that are of interest, like the biologic, chemical and biological warfare facilities. So when we come to those, I think it would make sense that the committee is aware of them and maybe even visit some of them and just look at what is being done there. Okay, let me move on to the question that was raised by Honorable Ndlovu. It related to the HR goals. And then he said in the report, Mr. Magojo spoke about 30%, but it wasn't clear if 30% of what. Where did we start with these goals? What was it previously? And then what is the end goal? Where are we aiming to get to? Mr. Magos, can I ask you to respond to that question?
Thank you. Chairperson, my understanding of Honorable Lobo's question was that it referred to the BEE criteria, because that's the area where I made reference to 30%. And if I understood it correctly, then the 30% is really, you know, there are a number of points I listed, percentage owned by black persons, etc. These are the criteria to qualify for BEE points. And these are in line with the government, DTI's Black Economic Empowerment Scorecard.
But they relate to 30% of the money and that.
The weight are something. Yes, the weight, for instance, the 30%, part of the points that are allocated to BEE, 30% is in respect of the percentage owned by black people, 10% is only percentage owned by black disabled persons, and so on. So, and then it all amounts to 100%, which would be in respect of the points that get allocated for BEE.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'm a little bit confused. Maybe I don't follow the question, the answer correctly. What I'm trying to get is that 30% of what? Where do you come from? Where did you arrive to 30%? And where are you going? Is it your start or your finish? Are you still here and no more? You may say the BEE has been given. Thank you, Chair. What I'm trying to say, you are here now on this 30%. Of what, firstly? And secondly, where do you come from? Now, I just heard now, Chairperson, if you heard, that he is saying 30% that is allocated to. What does that mean, allocated to? Allocated by who and by what percent in aiming to get what? As you are here in this 30%. I don't know, that it, maybe my question is not clear. Maybe they will assist me. But I wanted your first line, now we are in the middle line of getting this 10, 30, 20%. Where, from where to where?
I think this directly talks to your PPPFA, if I'm correct. I think this is where that ends up coming from, to then say what informs you, if you may then talk to that.
And does it simply end there? Because I know even other departments have been having a problem with that. So then say, could this act be amended in one or the other? So that's then the reason. Does it end there?
Yeah.
Well, what informs?
Yeah. I think what we'll try and do for the benefit of all the members is that we'll just try and go to that slide and put it up there so that we make sure that this is what the Honorable Ndoku is talking about. Okay, let me try and explain. Let me try and give the explanation. If you look here, there's 30%, 10%, and everything. But what he didn't show is that all these numbers add up to 100%. So, the Act says, for you to be regarded as a BEE company, you must 100%, okay, for you, for the company that you own, to be regarded as a BEE company and to be able to give, to be given a contract by government, or AMSCO for that matter, which is spending government money, is that you must comply to this. You will be given a weight of 30% that if your company has given shares to black people. If your company has given more than 25% or more of your shares being owned by black people, then you will get 30 points. You will get 30%. You are aiming to get 100%, which is the addition of all these numbers here. 30% will be given to you if at all your shares, 25% or more, are owned by black people. You'll get 30%. And then if those shares, you'll get an additional 10, if all those 30 people, you'll get an additional 10%, if among the blacks, they are disabled people, you get 10%. And then going forward, if at all they are black women, you get an additional 10%. Your aim is to get to as close to 100 as possible if you want to participate in government tenders and if you want to participate in AMSCO tenders. So the experts, as I've explained, you will be given 30% if you have got shares 25% or more owned by blacks. If at all some of those blacks are disabled, if some of them are women, and if at all you've got black executives in your management structure, you get an additional 20. And then if you develop black people, or if you spend money developing black people, the percentage of that total payroll within a period of 36 months, you get an additional 10%, just like that, up to the end. So companies come and tell us how many of their shares are owned by black people. All those black people, how many are disabled? How many are women? How many black people are in their executives, in the team that runs the company? How many people are black there? And all those things. And that is prescribed by the Act, the BEE Act. Triple BEE.
Of what? I think that's the question. Is it of contracts that the government then is going to give? I think that if you say
30% of that. 30%, you get? Okay. What I'm saying is,
this is the scorecard that
you're talking about. This is the scorecard I'm talking about. 30% of points. The scorecard allocate points. So you get... Yeah?
Okay, just explain it. I hope you appreciate it.
All right, I just wanted to say that, you know, there's the, let's say there's 100%.
Of what?
Of the, you know, you have, of the evaluation point. So let's say there's 80, which goes towards functionality and price, then it qualifies you. And then there's the 20%.
which is allocated to the transformation aspect. So out of that, then it will be 30% of the 20, and then and so it goes.
No, actually, what he's saying is that when we issue out tender, we say to the people who are tendering, we are going to evaluate you out of 100 points. You must get 100 points. 40% of the points will be allocated for your price. If you are on the lowest price, you will get all the points. And then another 40 points are allocated for the functionality, whether the thing that you are offering us can do the job as we want it to do the job. Quality. And then from there there is 20%. We say 20% will be allocated for black economic empowerment. 20 points. Now, this is 30% of that 20 points. You get 30% of the 20 points, 10% of the 30 points, just like that. Okay. And then if Honorable Joe is heavy, then we will take one, the final one from Honorable Mwase.
No, I needed to check here in this organogram of AMSCO now. Who is responsible? You see, we've got an organogram. Nice features on this side here in your organizational structure. Who is responsible for the effecting of the BEE? You see, at some point there was a woman, I think it's Miss Bloom who you presented here and said she's dealing with that BEE component. But when I look into your organizational structure, I don't see anybody dealing with that one specifically. You see, because it has to be given specific focus at an organizational level, such that when it's effected, it gets effectively effected. And then when you want to show ensure compliance of those figures, you do it that way through a dedicated person in your organization, but I don't see anybody dealing with it. Maybe you can clarify that for me. That from this point of view, where is that person applied? Who does it in terms of warm bodies?
Chair, thank you very much, Chairperson. I do understand what Mr. Choma was saying when he explained his thing. But you see, when you look at that document, it doesn't say what they're saying. Now, that is why sometimes maybe there are areas where we like details. There are areas where we don't like details. This one is very important because we want to know where did you arrive to 30%? How far are you going? If you are not here, we are just reading the document, it won't make sense. That is why I'm saying, now, the way we have differentiated, you put it in three categories. We didn't know about those three categories, and they are not written down yet. I think that's why, therefore, the addendum from Munareng, that the person who is doing this thing must be very clear, because that is where our line of thinking is. And we want to know that the government is dealing with who at the end of the day. Who do we spend the money with? And so on and so forth. But thank you very much for the explanation, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Ndo. To answer very quickly the question that the Honorable Munareng has asked, on the very page that he refers to, at the very last row, there is a lady there, N.R.M. Broad. She is the one who is responsible for the BEE, but she is not the one who carries the task. There is somebody at the level of Ms. Sindane Bloom, who, her name is Nomkosi Magwaza. She's responsible for that. Actually, it's just a pity we are supposed to have brought her here, but she, for some reason she couldn't come.
So she is physically responsible for that, and then she's got a team of about four other people whose job it is to implement BEE, and they report to her. And then finally, I was talking about issues that were raised by Honorable Mwase. He raised the issue of late appointments and wanted to know what do we mean by late appointments. Because we kept on saying there are certain people who were appointed late and subsequently that has resulted in us saving money. What we mean by that is that in 1 year, you want a certain amount of money that you allocate as a salary of somebody you are going to appoint. You say, I'm going to appoint this engineer to do this job, and then that engineer, I'm going to pay him, I don't know, half a million or whatever the case may be. And then you start putting adverts out, advertising and inviting people to apply for this job. The first time, maybe you don't get appropriate responses. The second time, you get the correct responses. You start interviewing. And after interviewing, you send these people to go and get the CNS security clearance. When you get there, you find that the one person fails the security clearance. Because he had his previous job, I don't know, he stole some photocopier paper, and then they fired him. You start the process afresh. And then eventually you get somebody somewhere in November, December. Now, from March, all that time up to November, December, you had the money to pay the salary to this person, but you didn't have the person. And subsequently you get them in November, December, or January. Now you start paying them, and then the money that you were unable to pay them is a saving. And then subsequently you see that we say, we have saved some money here because we found these people late. That's what we mean by that.
On your page, on your PowerPoint page, number 3 there, an unusual high number of resignations, retirements, and so on and so on. It would have happened on the very same financial year. But now, everybody who is withdrawing there or retiring or resigning is got a severance package. Doesn't this severance package cover this money which will be paid to people who will be employed late? Because severance package just give a certain monthly salary that is finished. The other money that you are giving to it. And so many people have been retiring.
When people retire, they don't get a severance package. When you retire, you retire. Even when you resign, you don't get a severance package. But what happens is that the company makes provision for pension and medical aid and all those related issues. Those are not part of this money. They are managed separately. When you go and pension, now the pension fund starts paying you. But it doesn't come from these monies.
Okay.
And then the very last question that the Honorable Marcel raised was the appointment of women. Why were the vacancies frozen? Mr. Mabash.
Thank you, Chairperson. The word frozen was perhaps inappropriate. It's actually position is not being filled. And it's really relating to this long process which we battle with to fill positions. And, you know, for instance, Mr. Tomo painted the scenario that in some instances may take 3 or 4 months. And so if there's a vacancy like that, it may, you know, that long period, it may then fall in, you know, the end of the year might come before the position is filled. Then were reflected as the position having not been filled. And also, it's not to say that it was guaranteed that would ultimately have found a woman to fill the position, but it just means that it gives us an opportunity when there's a vacancy to be filled, to fill it with a woman.
No, there's something wrong with your explanation. In your transformation, there are slots for women.
they are slaughtered for disabled, they are slaughtered for different people. They use the well. I understand if you say the well frozen was not, maybe was not supposed to be used. Come the end of the 31st of March next year, you couldn't get clean the women. If you say it was not guaranteed and so on, are you saying you're transferring the slaughter of a woman to a maid? That's the first question. The second question, are you saying that you cannot then start afresh, as Tom was saying, start afresh, look for a qualified person to make that person fill the post, to make that lady or woman fill the post? What are you trying to say? Are you trying to say, I'm giving up because I don't get it, I'm going for the maids now?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. The issue here is that you may prioritize a position to fill it with a person of a certain profile, and we actually do delay appointments, we re-advertise, we look at other options, but when you've done all you can to fill a position, ultimately you have to fill the position, and then you'll have to look at the people that are available among the applicants. And when we advertise, we highlight that preference will be given to transformation candidates. So when we go through the recruitment process, we prioritize, we look at that first, and then ultimately, if it doesn't work, then we look at the non-transformation candidate. But as I say, what you often do is that we try again. We may advertise, which is something that we do, and then look at other options, try executive search or headhunting.
We want to just add something. There are certain positions where it's easy to find women to fill the position. And there are certain ones where it is extremely difficult. But in the case where it is easy to find women, we insist that this position will be filled by a woman finishing in class. And then where it is difficult to find women, and then we might find a man. But even though there is a woman who he can do the job, the woman will give you the preference.
I'm looking at the scorecards here. This BEE scorecard, it means that the people who struggle to get this question in the 80, 10, 20, 20, 20, and then this will lead us to be having fewer BEEs or nothing at all. If you struggle yourself then, now how about the other companies who are applying, who are going to work with you on this scorecard? Because if you follow it, the way you address them on this issue, it will mean that very few will achieve this scorecard state. And so we are not going to have any DVD.
Thanks, Joseph. I'm sorry, maybe I'm trying to be nonsense, but I don't understand. There's something that I don't understand. You have a vacancy. This is a vacancy. Oh, firstly, firstly, we have subscribed to the transformation. That's the underlining statement. Now, in this underlining statement, you have positions that are allocated to women, males, whatever. Now, this is the vacancy that Magojo has advertised. For two times, he doesn't get a lady. What does he do? He takes Mr. Dooley. Because he doesn't get a lady, he wants this job to be done. How then are you going to implement and come to the position where you say, my transformation now is taking a route, and we are at the board, when we put the board here, then we can see that we are going from here up to here. If Magojo will say, when we are in number 5, say, no, we can't get these other 5. Let us go for maize, because we can't find female. That's where my problem is.
That's where my problem is. That what then? If today Makoto comes to the executive and to the board and says, I can't get technical women, full stop. Can you give me the blanket decision to employ two and more? Is that what my brother is saying? Because that will be, that is why I have the way it's been explained. It's very bad for me to say, if I can't get this one, then I will ask for the permission to get this one because I want the job to be done. Now, why then are we not going to the tertiary education? Why don't can we have the students? Why then can we open up the bursary of making sure that we get what we want, but applying the same standards of representativity?
Okay. I'll start with Honorable Ndlovu and then go to Honorable Munare. If you've got a job that needs to be done, and then let's suppose the vacancy is in human resources. In human resources, it is possible, or you are looking for a lawyer or somebody in human resources, those professions, it's easy to get women in those professions. And when we have a vacancy like that, we insist that it will be filled by women. And even if there is no way Magoja will say he can't get somebody, because he can only say he can't get the correct candidate, but people will be there. So we will insist that you will employ a woman and he will employ a woman. If the woman you want to employ is not at the level that you want her to be, employ the best person that you've got and then train them to the level. But now, if we are talking about engineers, we are talking about aircraft engineers. We want somebody who will be in a position to evaluate the design of an aircraft engineer. There, we don't necessarily specify a woman. We want anyone who can do the job. But preference will be given, if there are women who can do the job, we'll take a woman. If there can't be a woman, after we've advertised a few times, then we will take a black man. If there's no other, if we can't find a black man, and the best person is a white man, then we will take a white man. But now, what we are saying is, it is possible that we could go to universities and recruit people. But at that stage, you are looking for somebody who can do the job now. The DOD is waiting. They say, we are waiting for our aircraft. Tomo, what are you doing? I need to get somebody who can deliver now, who can do the job. I can go to university and recruit people and bring them. But they are going to give me the job 5 years down the line. But the job needs to be done now. So we do have a program where we get people from university and bring them into AMSCO and train them. But at times, the situation is urgent. You want somebody who can do the job now. That is the one thing. And then Tatemwa, we also spoke about what we were talking about, the balance scorecard, and the fact that if at all these companies who must satisfy that criteria, if at all we are struggling like this, it means those people have got a problem. Maybe they do, but these are two different things now. The one that we have just spoken about now relates to our own employees. When we want to appoint people inside AMSCO, that one relates to we apply when we give tenders out. For you to be able to get a tender from AMSCO, you must fulfill the issue about the price, you must fulfill the issue about the quality, and then you must fulfill the issue about the BEE, the law, and then the allocation of those points. We allocate those points to the BEE part. That is about tender. This one, it was about our own employees inside AMSCO. Okay, I think I've answered them.
Thank you. This is why I asked Mr. Korenov to thank you. I think getting to that particular point, I can see the business mind and the immediate issues that you want to begin to address because there's a shortage of skills. But I think the members are not hearing you to then say you have some kind of a 5-year plan, like your Department of Health.
where you are targeting students in universities, preparing for the future. As a member, I don't think I'm hearing that, but you are having a strategic plan that you put into place. So then you emerge as well in the shortage of skills. This is what we are currently doing. Because we keep on talking about the retention. But if you don't have a plan to address this situation, because this is not an immediate thing, it's not just a short-term thing, it's a long-term program that we have, then we want to hear that. I think this is what the members are currently saying. Because short-term interventions are not assisting. They will keep on coming and giving a problem. One other thing that the members, I think, are also reflecting on is that they don't hear your marketing strategy, how you market yourself. I hear the question of headhunting and other things, but that doesn't really help. To make your business being attractive, how do you have a marketing strategy? I want to see AMSCO in the front page of the Sunday Times, not in the business. Our people don't normally go to the business section to find AMSCO. So they want to hear what AMSCO is currently doing, so that it can begin to be, well, what is your marketing strategy? How do you begin to market yourself? Because you are doing great work for the country. And you must be as competitive as you currently say to meet with the international companies that are executing the same kind of work that you're doing. How do we then begin to protect you? You spoke about the intellectual property. Those are some of the things that we keep on talking about, because most of the things that we get in South Africa currently, we get from abroad. Whereas South Africa, previously, they used to produce those things. So I'm then saying, these are the critical questions. Your current relationship with the department, I think the members were also talking to that kind of a relationship that you are having with the department. That they were talking directly to your agreement that you have with the department. Because the act is there. That's why they simply touch on the act in passing to then say, but what is your core function? Because next time around we meet, we are going to zoom in into exactly that, because it does not just simply end there, because we are going to grill the Department of Defense for their entity. To ever end, it's the same question that we asked some time last year about the entities, all the entities. The question of their violence, do we still need these entities? So these questions will keep on coming on and on again. Are they valuable to the country? That's the reason. And there are certain things that we have to preserve. You have raised some important issues that we have to preserve. That's why Mr. Coroner came up strongly to then make that strong proposal to then say, we have to look into that. Not just the sake of disposing for the sake of disposing, because at the end of the day, this is our country. Now, having said that, I think we've discussed it with members. We have agreed with the Department of Defense that we have to meet quarters to begin to follow on the issues that they've made commitments. You've made commitments here that you'll be doing this and that and that and that. We've recorded all those things. But we want to make follow-up by inviting you, probably when we sit in a meeting and look once again into your presentation, we might come up now with a firm position to then say, we have to have a standard kind of a calendar between the committee and yourself where we meet with you. But we have to meet before the department comes and presents its strategy plan for this coming year. So it is important that we touch base again with yourself to look into that. Because you correctly said that you end up being part of their strategic planning. But also we have to begin to engage with yourself. As I said earlier, on behalf of the members, I think that the Coroner will take the last honor and do the wrap-up on our behalf.
Thank you, Chair. I think you've said everything already on behalf of the committee. But thank you, Mr. Tomo, for you and your team for an excellent presentation and a good annual report that you've tabled in Parliament this year. It's an easy-to-read report, and I think you've covered everything that needs to be covered. And we want to wish you well in not only in what the chair says, your marketing challenges that you have, but also your whole strategic direction that you're going into, and also your relationship. and in this transformation and going concern. We know from previous engagements that you have tremendous challenges, and we wish you well in your challenges to succeed in that. And as the chair say, you're doing great work for South Africa, and the acquisition and offshore to us is a national asset. I just hope, and I'd like to note that Comrade Bloom will be next time in one of the front benches here, just to get the balance right of gender, and maybe and also maybe to speak to us, because she's a constant factor here for the committee. We've come to know her quite well, and we want to thank her for the hard work that she's also done behind the scenes. But thank you on the behalf of the committee for your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. No, we want to thank the committee as well for the guidance that we have received, and some of the questions that the committee has raised. Obviously, we will take some of the shortcomings that you have helped us identify back to AMSCO and try and work on them so that we improve when we come next time. We are able to give you proper insight, especially some of the remarks that were made by Honorable Ntsovu about, you know, you are talking about this thing, you understand exactly what it is, but you haven't given us background. We will go back and look at issues like those. And the problem that we always have is to balance the amount of detail that we need to give you without giving you a lot of volumes to read. But thank you very much to the committee for the guidance that they have given us. Thank you very much, Chair.